ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय सा उच्चकाशे दावलोधरो दरो अपि उरुक्रमस्य धरसोना सोनिमा दद्मायमाना करा कंजा संभुते यथाब्जा कंदे कला हंसा उत्स्वना स उच्चकाशे द्वललो धरो धरो अप्युरुक्रमस्य धरा सोना सोनिमा धद्मायमानः करखञ्जसंपुते यथब्ज खंडे कलहंस उत्स्वना स उच्चकाशे धवलो धरो धरो प्युरुक्रमस्य धरसोन सोनिमा दद्मायमानः करखञ्जसंभुते यथब्जखण्डे कलहंस उत्स्वनः स उच्चकाशे द्वललो धरो धरो युरुक्रमस्य धरशोन शोनिमा धद्मायमानः करखञ्जसंभुते यथब्जखण्डे कलहंस उत्स्वनः
Sah.
That.
Uchakakshe. Became brilliant. Davanala Udhara.
White and fat bold.
Dhara.
Kanchel.
Api.
Although it is so.
Urukramasya.
Of the great adventure.
Adharashona.
By the transcendental quality of his lips.
Sonima.
Reddened.
Dhadmayamana.
Being sounded.
Karakanja Sampute.
Being caught by the grip of his lotus hand.
Yataha.
As it is.
Abjakande.
By the stems of lotus flowers.
Kalahamsa.
Ducking swan.
Utsvana.
Loudly sounding.
Translation.
The white and fat bold conch shell, being gripped by the hand of Lord Krishna and sounded by him, appeared to be reddened by the touch of his transcendental lips. It seemed that a white swan was playing in the stems of red lotus flowers.
Purport.
The redness of the white conch shell due to the lip touch of the Lord is a symbol of spiritual significance. The Lord is all spirit, and matter is ignorance of his spiritual existence. Factually, there is nothing like matter in spiritual enlightenment, and this spiritual enlightenment takes place at once by the contact of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. The Lord is present in every particle of his existence, and he can manifest his presence in anyone. By ardent love and devotional service to the Lord, or in other words, by spiritual contact with the Lord, everything becomes spiritually reddened like the conch shell in the grip of the Lord. And the Paramahamsa, or the supremely intelligent person, plays the part of the ducking swan in the water of spiritual bliss, eternally decorated by the lotus flower of the Lord's feet. So here we can appreciate the vision that Srila Prabhupada has in taking this verse about blowing of a conch shell and bringing out very poetically the inner meanings that is here. This is very important, because many times it is thought by devotees, or some profess, that Prabhupada's just giving basic, and somebody else will give you the very esoteric and very rasik understanding. But here we have just blowing a conch shell, and that rasik aspect is brought out. Krishna just comes into Dwarka in the previous verse, sounding the conch shell, and Krishna and Prabhupada brings out spontaneous devotional service. So it's very important to note that someone who is just come in contact means, let's be more blunt, a girl or boy who has just come into puberty and just figured out that the opposite sex is something of interest will talk more about it, more vividly, though they themselves don't really have much entrance into it. But the married persons, who it's their lawful right to be involved in this intimate relationships, they talk about it very little, and in public, not at all. Does this make some sense? So therefore, those who speak so much about this, and they can only speak about it from the grossest parts, most obvious, means you can take the Panchadhyaya of the 10th canto, that is all about the rasa dance. Yes, it's easy to get out of that some juice about conjugal rasa, and get some rasa from that. But now, what kind of rasik would you understand, someone who can take the Lord blowing his conch shell in Dwarka and be able to take from that rasa? And these are the pastimes that those same rasiks avoid. So we can see here what is the more developed platform of rasik. Right? Rasik, yes, someone who appreciates, who tastes, who enjoys. But that's there. Like someone, he can enjoy his own cuisine, right? One is from a particular background, one enjoys one's own cuisine. But someone who is expert cook, a master cook, they can enjoy from any cuisine if it's cooked properly. But the local person can only enjoy their own. Everything else is strange. So it's very important to understand what we're dealing with. We cannot take things cheaply. Very easy to take things cheaply. Because cheap is obvious. Right? Expensive is not. Right? Something gaudy, something shiny, something big. Yes, yes, oh, this is something special. But something very subtle and understated, then only those who really know will understand. This is the way the world is. And this is the way the spiritual world is. Because spirit, matter, is a reflection of spirit. So we're not dealing with sentiment here. We're dealing with just fact. Right? Cold fact. That those who are on the topmost platform, they see Krishna in everything. They are Paramahamsa. So here, Prabhupada is saying, the Paramahamsa, they are diving and surfacing in this aspect. So for them, every syllable of Bhagavatam is special. And we're in the first canto here. And we're in Dwarka Lila. And the Brajbasis can take and find nectar here. This is Paramahamsa. This is Rasik. Others may also be Rasik. But we have to understand that there is gradation even in transcendental. Right? One may say, no, no, absolute, it's all the same. Yes, it's all the same. Just like the blades of grass and Mother Yashoda and the gopis are all the same. Right? We make no distinction. Technically, there is no difference, but we do make distinction. Just as those same rasiks make distinction between Vrindavan pastimes, Dwarka pastimes, and Braja pastimes, then the gopis pastimes, and the gopis pastimes, and the maidservants, and Krishna, Radharani, her. They make that distinction. So then why can't, if we can make distinction in the Lord and His eternal associates between Braja Krishna and, you know, Dwarka Krishna and this, why can't we make distinction between rasiks? Right? It only naturally follows. There's simultaneously no distinction and distinction. So if there's distinction, then we can see. We have to appreciate that Prabhupada is on this topmost platform of Paramahamsa. Not Hamsa, Paramahamsa. He's able to take and appreciate such pastimes and take from it this juice. So this must be appreciated. Everything else, then according to Rupa Goswami, must be seen through this vision. You want to get at something else? Fine. But you're going to get through it from this vision. Otherwise, you're not going to get to it at all. Don't fool yourself. Right? This is something that's revealed in the Prema Samputta, where Krishna is trying to understand Radharani's mood towards him and love for him, and trying to understand how much does she understand of my mentality. Right? Common thing, right? Amongst those who have affection for another, there's always that doubt, especially when you cross, you know, gender lines. Right? Within gender, it's more easy. When you cross gender lines, basically impossible. Right? So there's always that constant doubt, is that there? Even though it's told a million times, shown a million times, still you need a million times to confirm it. Right? So this is the wonderfulness of Krishna's pastimes, because he's ever fresh, Radharani is ever fresh, so therefore their interaction is ever fresh, so there's always ever fresh reasons to find out about what the other is feeling. Right? Here we don't have the ever fresh, but still the modes of nature, you know, force this process. Right? Even though there's nothing more to find out. So Krishna comes as a demigoddess, and after being welcomed by Radharani's friends, she's given a place, there's discussions, and in the discussion then it comes up about that she wouldn't know the mind of Krishna, her boyfriend. The demigoddess is asking, which is, who is Krishna? And Radharani says, no, I understand. He says, but how, means we saw, you know, we were watching the Rasa dance, Krishna just left you. So how is that, you know, his affection for you? He just left you, he left you, left you. It means he left all the other gopis, okay, so you're special, but he left you also. So then Radharani pointed out, says, no. See, the point is he's trying to establish a common platform of mood in the rasa dance. And if each gopi is trying to keep herself as the center, you're not going to have a rasa dance. Right? Jealousy doesn't make for a great, you know, mood of oneness. So, to create that, he left so that all the gopis would understand that they are maybe special, but Radharani is more special. And then she left him, because when they came, if they had seen her with him, they would become more jealous. But by him leaving, then them seeing her feelings of separation, then they would appreciate her love as greater. Then the purpose would have been complete. In this explanation, why it has to be brought into line is Srimati Radharani, being the Swarup Shakti, she is completely, fully the internal potency. So every aspect of Krishna's personality and desire, she has a complementary aspect for. So that means there's nothing that Krishna can't do that she can't complement and please him. Everybody else is an expansion of her. That means they cannot do that. And once you expand, it drops. So Radharani points out, when Krishna is with any other gopi, it's like Krishna being with a few mustard seeds, compared to being with Radharani, which is like him being with Mount Meru. Quite dynamic difference to change. Compare Radharani's affection to Meru, all of the gopis to a few mustard seeds. You know, it's not like Meru, then the Himalayas, or the middle of India, Vindhya Mountains. You know, something big. Trikuti Mountain. No. Mustard seeds and Meru. Meru starts from the bottom. Patal is connected to it. It goes all the way up and Indra's planet sits on top of it. That's Meru. And it's solid gold. Spirit. So that's the comparison. So then we can understand, if we, in our foolishness, try to approach Krishna directly or on our own, the maximum, I'm talking on a good day, right? We can get 2 or 3 mustard seeds of pleasure for Krishna. What do we approach through his devotees, assisting them? Then the pleasure Krishna gets is Mount Meru plus those few mustard seeds. Right? So we can add mustard seeds to the equation. Now it's just a matter of, you want to add it to nothing, or do you want to add it to Mount Meru? Right? That's the choice. And of course, we can philosophically say, if you don't approach through Mount Meru, there are going to be no mustard seeds. But whatever, just for discussion, just so there's some comparison. So we can see, if we don't approach the Lord's pastimes through our acharya, and that way approach the previous acharyas, there is no Mount Meru. Just know that for a fact. Right? We can imagine so many things. How many times a boy thinks, you know, all the girls love him, or the girls think all the boys are after them, or I'm going to get this is going to happen, that, and then you find out it's absolutely nothing to do with reality. Right? The boy didn't even know you existed, let alone be, you know, madly in love with you. Right? So that's the mind. So the mind can easily trick us that, yes, so much enjoyment, so much advancement, diving and surfacing in the ocean of Krishna's, you know, Vrindavan pastimes, but it's only your mind. The mind's very clever, right? And it's been at it a long time. Don't worry, this mind you're with now is what you've been with since time immemorial. You came into the material with it. And when you leave, that's the one you'll give up your association with it. So we're quite used to it. We even identify with it. Anything it dreams up, we say, it's me. So it has a pretty strong, you know, ruling and influence on our life. So we have to be very careful to know that when the acharyas say that it works in this way, or in that way, that's the way it works. It doesn't matter what we think it works, that's one thing. How it actually works, that's reality. Right? I mean, that's what we saw. It was somebody's house, and it had something you stick on your refrigerator. You know, the mother sticks it on the refrigerator. And it said something like, you know, it was addressing the teenager, that you should go out and, you know, get a job and conquer the world while you know, you still feel that, you know, you're, you know, God's grace to the creation, before you get out and find out you're just an idiot. You know, while you're still the most intelligent person in the world, you know, go out there and do something, you know. So this is the position is very easy for the individual living entity to think themselves very intelligent, very special, very unique. But reality may be something different. So that's why it's important that we always have to come in line with the acharyas. Then we find out actually what's going on. Otherwise, we may miss the boat. Right? So, yeah. So then here, then Prabhupada is touching on this, that one, they're getting such a taste out of this, and they use such nice metaphors and similarly, all these different things, poetic. So you can understand, one of the 26 qualities of devotee is poetic. So even in discussing this, then one, the poetics of Sutta Goswami here is great, and the poetics that Prabhupada uses also is very, very great here. So the great taste they are getting. And in this, they are tasting here also the principle of, that's given in the Gita, of anything touching Krishna then becomes Krishnaized. Right? You're doing it in connection with Krishna, then it becomes nice, it becomes Krishnaized. Because Krishna is in everything, between everything. So whatever is going on is Krishna. Now it's just a matter of whether we want to connect with Krishna, that we're doing it for His pleasure, and on what level we want to do it for His pleasure. Right? That's also means because Krishna has entered into everything as Paramatma. He has entered everything through His energies as Garbhodakshay Vishnu. Right? We were just discussing that yesterday. In the marriage ceremony, then there's two mantras. There's a Narayana Gayatri given, and a Kama Dev, not our Kama Gayatri. But one of them, the Narayana Gayatri, is to Kirodakshay Vishnu, in that He's entered everything, and everything is Him. Then the next mantra is to Garbhodakshay Vishnu, that He is makes everything attractive. Right? Whatever's attractive, that's Him. Right? Means we have, you know, like you have this room, okay. We have this room and we have those doors. They're made out of material energy. That's coming from Krishna. And Paramatma is there within it. But that doesn't necessarily make it, for us, necessarily special. But Krishna enters it. So through His aesthetic potency, He enters it. Then we look at the door and we go, oh, that's nice. Right? Or even less, we might just notice the shine of the door. So it's just the varnish. Krishna's entered shininess. So then it becomes attractive. So we think it's the doors, but actually it's Krishna. Because we're into like Vedic motives and this, then it looks very attractive. We're not, it may not be attractive. Right? Very common you see something with a more modern, vernacular. It looks great today, and tomorrow it looks pretty tacky, right? You look at architecture from the 60s, looks pretty dumb, you know? But if you look at something that's more classic, hundreds of years ago, it still looks good. And you go, the Greek stuff and Roman stuff still looks great, you know? But modern stuff sometimes looks a little not so nice. You know, because it has less of the principles of Krishna's potency in it. Something is there, so you catch the shininess of it, simplicity of it, something. All those qualities, what you'll describe as something's attractive, all those are Krishna's potencies. So that's what's attractive about it. So now, if that is therefore connected to Krishna through devotional service, then it becomes empowered with the chit potency. Because just because it's Krishna, okay, that's nice. But how are you going to connect to Krishna? We can't directly connect to Krishna. How are we going to connect? So we discussed before, is through His internal potency. Right? Us appreciating Krishna, okay, that's great. It's appreciation. But the acharyas do say, do not classify the Santa Ras actually as a rasa in Vrindavan. Outside Vrindavan, it's a prominent rasa. In Vaikuntha, you have those in servitorship, those in appreciation. But in Vrindavan, it's not classified really as a major rasa. It's there, but technically, it's not what is of interest. Why enter Vrindavan if one's only interested in that? Therefore, then the other four are considered the prominent rasas. Right. So, that appreciation is very nice. So we're talking about gopis are a couple of mustard seeds, let alone just us on our own appreciating. Right? But when we connect to Krishna through the internal potency, then it carries the weight of the internal potency plus our appreciation. Does that make sense? So that's how the small becomes significant. On their own, we're insignificant. But when we're connected to Krishna through the internal potency, then we become significant. Because we add something to that full significance. Does that make some sense? So, therefore, then by the touch, then it becomes reddened. So when Krishna's touch is there through His devotees, right here it mentions, through His devotees, then we are able to appreciate. It becomes spiritualized. then whatever we're doing then has that transcendental potency, even though seemingly it may be mundane. Right? The karmis many times think things we do are mundane, but we know they're different. We eat, they eat, but it's different. Same time, even devotees think things the devotees do are mundane. You know? How many times have you heard, oh, GBC is just a managing body, it's just mundane. Right? So why is it that you can take a potato and offer it to Krishna and this potato is spiritual? Right? Same potato out in the backyard of, you know, the next door neighbor. It's the same potato. Why is it our potato is spiritual, his isn't? Right? So it's that way with everything. So that spiritual vision, then by how you see it spiritually in connection with Krishna, then that much of your life becomes spiritualized. Right? It's obvious that when we chant Hare Krishna, we're in the temple, we're going to Artik, we're taking Charitamrita, we're taking Prasadam, you know, we're reading Bhagavatam, that this is spiritual. But when we're doing services for Krishna, when we're dressing for Krishna, when we're doing other things, do we see that as spiritual? So here's the point. He's just blowing his conch and that connection is made because it touches the Lord. So it doesn't matter what it is. Right? Here a conch is touching, it becomes spiritualized, it becomes reddened. So in the same way, anything that touches Krishna through his internal potency becomes reddened with that transcendental energy. Does this make some sense? So it's the whole thing is this spiritual life is very practical. It includes everything for your emotions, for your economic needs, your sensual needs, your needs to, you know, be freed from anxiety. All of that's there. But we have to know the science of connecting it to Krishna. It's not by sentiment that it happens. It's the science that it happens. Of course, without the sentiment that I want to please Krishna, I want to develop love for Krishna, then the rest doesn't happen. Because that's the working principle. But the point is to that degree that you want to connect to Krishna and everything, those things become connected. Right? Some things are connected if we follow just the order of Guru, even if we don't know how it's working, it still works. But when we venture off on our own, then we better know what we're doing. Right? Then we better know what we're doing. You know, it's like so much we hear, oh, well, Prabhupada didn't do like that, or in the early days we didn't do like that. That's okay, as long as you're doing today exactly what they did in the early days. Are you going out on Harinam 12 hours a day? Are you living in the temple? You're being maintained just by the temple? You're just doing what you're told to do? So if your answer is yes, then keep life simple like then. You're doing fine. But if there's a no to any one of those answers above, then that means you better know what you're doing. Right? Life is simple then. And so the process is very simple. You just deal with the principles. Very little detail you have to deal with. But if you're going to go out and add a lot of detail to your life, then you got to know the science of adding that detail. Otherwise, it's just talk. Sounds nice, great sentiment. Oh, we just do what Prabhupada does. Great, nice talk, but I don't see it. Prove it. Then we can say yes. Otherwise, it's nice sentiment. It goes great in meetings. You can shut people down, shut people up. But in reality, the bottom line is, it's nothing, it's hollow. It has absolutely no meaning. It's good sentiment that you want to do what Prabhupada said, but are you doing what he said? Is it supported by Guru Sadhu and Shastra? Is it according to the tradition? Right? Is it supported by... Then we can say, yes, I have been thoughtful, I have applied Prabhupada's teachings in my life, I have contemplated how to apply it, and I'm getting that result. I'm feeling that spiritualness in it. I'm feeling how the connection of whatever I have and whatever I'm doing is connected to Krishna. Then it's good. But the point is it's not just by sentiment, just by saying it, that it happened. Right? That's the point. Is we can't just say, oh, we just do what Prabhupada does, and then, okay, that says how long. We just do what Prabhupada does. Okay, it took about 2.5 seconds. Okay, now what do you do with the other, 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 57.5 seconds? Right? Because it's not going to happen automatically unless you consciously do it. International Society for Krishna Consciousness. If we're not conscious, then these details may not be happening. Right? What happens when we take prasad and all, that's, it's undescribed. Even Krishna can't describe what happens. But, but other than that, we have to really look at what we're doing. Is it Krishna conscious? How to make it Krishna conscious? So this is the thing. If it touches Krishna, it's Krishna conscious. But it has to touch. We can't just say it touches, it has to touch. It should be everything about our life. We know why we're doing it. Or at least if we don't know why we're doing it, we're not worried about it. We're not worried about everybody else doing it. But if it's going to be someone else is thinking about it and we don't want to think about it, so therefore we cut out the thing and say, oh, I won't want to think about this, so therefore we just do what Prabhupada said. That's okay. So then explain, what does Prabhupada say? What did he do? What was he doing? He had a science going on there. He said he was testing what would work on these Mlechas and Yavanas, how to get them to take up transcendental life. He was trying. He came in, 64 rounds didn't work. 32 rounds didn't work. 16 rounds, that better work. Then he was setting up a mat system, just like in the Gaudiya Mat, right? That's only brahmacharis, no women, no grihasthas. That didn't work. Okay, then we set up a temple system, right? We have temples in India. Grihasthas are there. Everybody's there. Fine. That works. He's going along. It's great. Devotees are staying up late at night, going out, getting up late, going out, hurrying up. All they're doing is preaching. Then 1970, he found that the very few knew the philosophy. And they could be so easily diverted from Krishna consciousness. So they thought, okay, we need some serious sadhana here and regulation to, stabilize and make them understand. He put in classes, he put in the Mangal Arati. That one devotee was telling me, before 1970, there was no Mangal Arati. So he said, we just do what Prabhupada does. So, oh yeah, we just sleep in, we never go to Mangal Arati. We never went to Mangal Arati in the early days. Is that what you mean by we just do what Prabhupada did in the early days? So this is the point. What do you mean? Define what we just do what Prabhupada does. So the point is it's here in the books. Prabhupada's saying is it should be connected here. So that's what Prabhupada was doing. Maybe that's what we weren't doing. But Prabhupada was doing it. Right? Prabhupada had arti, and would do all these different things. Right? Maybe a devotee called it bells or something. He would do. Devotees didn't know what was going on. It's just something Prabhupada did. So, therefore, it's important that we look at our life realistically. Not just our economics, not just our sense gratification, not just our status in society, from the mundane viewpoint, how to get it, but how to spiritualize it, how to Krishnaize it, how to connect it to Krishna. Right? Okay, it's real. We have to do it. It's important for us. Do it. But find its connection to Krishna. I mean, Yudhishthira's managing the world, and he found a connection to Krishna. So therefore, if we're just managing a small part, we should be able to find the link. Right? Mother just showed us cooking, the gopis are doing their things, the cows are, mooing. It means they're all doing something for Krishna. So that means the example is set for everybody. We have in the Bhagavatam the great Brahmins, the kings, you know, economics is going on, sense gratification is going on, liberation is going on. It's all going on in the Bhagavatam. It's all happening. But it's all connected to Krishna. So the example is given. We can find something for everything that we say is important, has to do with this and that. No, that's no problem. This whole thing of only if you're in the Dhamma or you're full-time, that's good, and if you're out there, you're in Maya, or only if you're out here in Maya, then you're really being realistic, and all those guys in the temple, they're all just faking it. This is all nonsense. The point is it doesn't matter where you are. If it's connected to Krishna, it's fine. If it's not connected to Krishna, then you can look at it from the mundane vision, what's better or not. If it is connected to Krishna, it's good. Not connected to Krishna, it doesn't have any meaning. Nice, good, okay, being realistic. Okay, being realistic, you fed your face, you put some clothes in your body, you know, you paid your mortgage, great. And then when you're dead, then what? You know, great. You'll definitely go down in history, right? You know, Mr. You know, George, you know, Emmanuel paid his mortgage on his house on 392 West, Orchard Avenue. Okay, great. Yeah? Anybody cares? Nobody cares. So, but that reality is so important. Okay, it's important. But if you connect it to Krishna, you'll go back to Godhead for paying your mortgage. But if you don't, then you'll have paid your mortgage, worked hard, you know, wasted your life, and at the end of your life, what are you going to get? Your mortgage is going to save you at the time of death? Mortgage will come up and chant Hare Krishna in your ear? Oh, yes. You get the piety of being able to pay your mortgage in your next life. Huh? Yeah, and someone else takes the house. Yeah. So whatever. So the main point is we're just, these things are just being brought up so that the idea of thinking that just checking, that's all. Just checking, regularly checking. Bhaktivinoda Thakura gives the idea that regularly we should check, review our devotional service. He gives an idea one way is like, every Ekadasi, you know, you have more time, you check. You just think through. Is everything connected? Or at night, according to Pancharatra, when you take rest at night, before you take rest, you review your activities of the day to offer them to the Lord. So naturally, when you go through that to offer to the Lord, then you'll find out what's offered, what's not. What you're doing in connection to Krishna, what's not. So between these methods, we just understand what we're doing and what we're not. Then it just makes us more conscious. Because if we're conscious, then we can remember Krishna. In other words, if we're not conscious, how will we be conscious of Krishna? So that's the idea. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. That's what's so nice about devotional service. It doesn't matter where one's situated, you know, socially or economically, anything. If it's connected to Krishna, then it's perfect. Right? Varnashram is simply to engage the conditioned nature you have today in the Lord's service. So it doesn't matter what it is. You know? It doesn't matter. You know, if you have potatoes in your cupboard, you cook potatoes for Krishna. If you have a cauliflower, you cook cauliflower for Krishna. Just whatever it is, there's a method to cook it. Right? You cook the potato one way, cauliflower another, cabbage another way. Right? There's a difference. So that's the whole, that's varnashram. Oh, okay, you're in a male body? Okay, so these are the things you do. You're a female? Okay, this is what you can do. Oh, you're a kid? Okay, this is what you can do. Oh, you're an old person? You can do this. You know, oh, you have business ability? Okay, then do this for Krishna. You have management? Do this for Krishna. You have intellect? Do this for Krishna. That's all. That's what the varnashram system is for. It's simply how to engage what you got. But because of our conditioning, then we think, you know, position and economics and facility and authority and control and enjoyment are important. Therefore, then we fight over it, or, you know, the prestige of this, the prestige of that. It's all mundane. According to Daivaranasha, it doesn't matter. You just do, you go back to Godhead. That's it. Is that making sense?
Vasudeva.
Yes, Jaya Vasudeva. You were quicker.
When you say connected, you talk about the two.
Yes.
And then we could intellectually analyze the Buddhist tradition, but it seems to me that we really feel connected and it's a devotional service is more than we give it practically.
Mm-hmm.
It requires that there's a ground surface, which is a higher pace.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems we really know we're connected with
the, you get the taste. Mm-hmm.
So, but in order to, we may be doing all kinds of things, but if we're not feeling that, it's very difficult to think of it. So, in order to get that kind of connection,
Okay, so Janmasthami Prabhu is bringing up a point that we've made very strongly the point about being conscious of what we're doing, thinking about it, analyzing it, coming up with some practical connection to Krishna. So then he's saying that, okay, that's good, but now our inspiration to do that or continue working on that then is going to be taste, right? Because the point is you have to get to the mind. The mind's not backing it, at least, theoretically, we don't do it. What our mind backs, that's what we do. What the mind doesn't back, it doesn't matter what the intelligence says. So that element has to be brought in. We made before the statements very strongly about the theoretical, or the intellectual aspect of this process, because many times the intelligence isn't used and sentiment is engaged, but the mind actually doesn't become engaged from that sentiment. You know what I'm saying? So we're trying to get to the mind. The mind has to get a taste for Krishna consciousness. The mind has to be connected to Krishna. That's why we do something. Then we use the intelligence to enhance that. So all we're saying is, don't get stuck with just some sentiment that is not full enough to actually engage your whole life and make you happy. So therefore, use the intelligence to identify what areas you're not fully engaged in. And in this way, then they can be engaged and you can get that taste. Then he makes the point, now it seems that to get that taste, one has to be performing devotional activities. One has to be performing sadhana. And by that sadhana, then one will get a taste for transcendence. Then, easily one can take that taste and apply that in one's service and other aspects. Right? Because sadhana is fairly easy, it's direct. Right? Krishna and the name are non-different. Krishna and the Bhagavatam are non-different. Krishna and the deity are non-different. The devotees, they're walking Bhagavat. Right? The Dham is the Lord's place. So these direct activities of sadhana, Krishna prasad, of course, most important. Prasad is Krishna. So these are very easy. So whether we're in a good mood or not, then it works. But in performing other services, many times we're interacting with the modes of nature. And we have to be detached from those modes, above those modes. Otherwise we become tangled in those modes. That's where we lose taste. Right? Generally, it's not we lose taste from chanting or reading or this and that. We lose taste because either the activities we're doing, we run into so many obstacles, it's difficult to deal with, we don't understand it, it doesn't fit into our purview on justice or what's right and wrong, or there's other activities that attract our mind. It's generally not that we don't like chanting, it's that we like something else better. Right? In the beginning, maybe someone doesn't like it because it's an obstacle to their enjoyment. But for those who have surrendered, devotees, generally it's not that the devotional activities they don't like, it's that something else is more attractive to them. Or they run into problems in their service. So that's coming from devotees, and devotional activities are done with devotees, and I'm having problem with devotees, so I don't like to be around devotees, so I don't get involved in the sadhana, and then it all falls apart. So, like Janmasthami Prabhu points out, is then the sadhana is very important to develop that taste and that stableness so that we can appreciate the spiritual. Then, naturally, from performing devotional service, jnana and vairag come as a natural side achievement. Those are awarded. So naishkarmya means that you're performing the activity in knowledge with detachment. So we perform the activity, even we're attached in the beginning, doesn't matter. It's connected to Krishna. It will become reddish, like the conch. With that will come knowledge and detachment. Then we'll be able to look at it through that view of naishkarmya and perform the activity without the attachment and see its connection to Krishna. So that will happen automatically. So one would ask, then, why are we making the point so strongly if it'll happen automatically? Because so many things happen automatically, we've got to be willing to accept that they're going to happen. Right? Like that. So, otherwise what happens is we do become sophisticated, we do become developed, and then there's the doubt, well, why get involved in this? It's not important. It's the natural involvement. Right? Life was simple as a child. Right? There's no much desire. You know, a few things to eat, some playing, but it's not complicated. Right? So is it a reality for adults to say, oh, I'll just be like a child? No. Because with time and maturity, their life has become more complex by necessity. So therefore, they engage that complexness in their adult world. They can use the principles of purity of the childhood, that the energy that is there, the nice interactions. You can use those principles, though the detail is a little different. You know? Like that, you know, you don't do the flying bullet hug, you know, like that as an adult. Kids do it, but the, you know, adults may not. So, it's still, but the principle still works. So in the same way as we become developed, then the simplicity that was there in the beginning of our Krishna consciousness, that principle still remains. But the sophistication that is developed from our performance of devotional service, now that sophistication should be engaged in the Lord's service. One shouldn't be afraid of it. That's the point of saying it. Because otherwise many times it's considered unimportant. Though it's there. You hear devotees intellectualizing on management or psychology or all kinds of things. You know, social customs and, you know, different issues. But Krishna conscious? No, you got to keep it simple. But simple is okay if it's principle. But no, they mean simple detail. We don't even want to think what even is a principle. So that's not fully engaging one's developed intelligence. So that's the point. As many times we don't use it. It's there, we don't use it. Does that make some sense? So then solution to that, like you said, is proper sadhana. Then that will develop the taste and the ability to perform. Is that okay? Or?
Yeah, in the absence of sadhana, I've found plant the seed that there was something different. And so the material activity is plugged into the internal energy. It needed to be something more. The fact that the service actually certainly relates to the dependency of the what the state is going to take.
So then, Jamasi Prabhu's conclusion on that is that the that if the sadhana is not there, then we much of the time find that we'll view things materially because we don't have that boost or that Krishna consciousness there. So then, by then following the sadhana, one gets that taste that actually inspires us to engage our nature in Krishna's service. Because otherwise, just engaging the nature is not enough. He's pointing out is that you've just engaged your nature in Krishna's service, but it may not be enough. We still don't get the taste. So there has to be that consciousness that we want to please Krishna, we want to follow the order of Guru, we want to do things that are proper for Krishna. Is that?
So people go beyond that, it's like Srila Prabhupada, he was engaged in management, he engaged in book publishing, and eventually every decision and every action he made was fully empowered to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because he was fully in the
internal,
just like, I've been discussing with Shanti Kanaya, like sanctified devotees, and I've been up for many years in the distribution. And if you chanted really good rounds, Krishna will show you the Rishikesh of the Torah Sutras directly.
Within the deity worship, what's called swadhyaya, you have five aspects of the deity worship. So the fifth one is all the elements of sadhana. Taking care of guests, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting japa, taking prasad, worshipping tulsi. All these different elements, those are all there. So without those, then the deity worship doesn't work. So in the same way as any other element of sadhana bhakti doesn't work without those. They go together.
It's like Prabhupada, I think, uses the word balabhaha when someone's worshipping deities.
What you were speaking in the beginning, that you see the Prabhupada has so much more there in these basic structures, that you can find so much definiteness. Can you please go more in there? Because today what you know, something Srila Prabhupada is about to connect. See, the secret of Krishna consciousness is to become absorbed in doing something very nice for Krishna. Where do we do? We absorb into a very nice situation. So, can you explain more about how the basic part of Krishna consciousness, like chanting, not the body, there that we actually also have something there?
I'm just thinking is that, because we could go on for some time discussing, so because many people have to go for classes and different things, that we'll end the class now, and then we'll continue for those who want to ask questions like that for, you know, for some time. That'll be good. So, Śrīla Granthārāja Śrīmad Bhāgavatam ki, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Sarvabhita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jāyate Tai Gaura Prema.
Sarvabhita Bhaktivedanta Pūrṇa Swāmī ki.
Jāyate.